Welcome to this Red Meat and Wool Growth Program podcast brought to you by PRRSA.
Pretty much since they began grazing cattle in the north of the state, technology has brought little to change the way pastoralists manage their herds. That, though, is rapidly changing. Satellites are giving access to the internet, and on-property networks are allowing the collection of data. It all adds up to detailed information to make the best possible decisions with. G'day, I'm Drew Radford, and this describes how Neals River Livestock is running Allendale Station on the Unidata track. Donna Clark is fifth generation from the region, and she moved onto the property 30 years ago with her husband, Andrew. And she joins us for this PRRSA podcast to discuss how they're using technology on the property. Donna, thanks for your time.
Good to be here, Drew.
Donna, for those unfamiliar, can you describe where Allendale Station is? Because it's in a little bit of a remote spot.
Allendale is about 1,000 kilometres north of Adelaide, 220 kilometres northeast of Coober Pedy. The homestead sits southeast of Unidata, about 20 kilometres, and it's quite a unique property in that the Olgan railway line traversed through the middle of it as it headed north. The railway line naturally follows John McDowell Stewart, and the Overland Telegraph followed that, and then the railway line. So it's a very unique property in terms of land systems, but also history.
It has got some great connections. It's a reasonable chunk of land, and it's also on some unique topography in terms of water flow as well. So how big and what's that topography like?
So we're 4,978 square kilometres, which I think transpires into 497,000 hectares. And it's predominantly gibber country or stony desert country. And while people think the word desert, it's actually not really like a desert. It's got a lot of natural waterways, drainage lines, with the main river system running through it is the Neals River or the Napamurra, and that flows down. It acts as a part of a catchment for the northwest catchment of the Lake Eyre, but lots of beautiful water holes. I think there's 117 water holes and lots of little places that we're still discovering after, I think, Andrew and I have been here 32 years. It's a really pretty property. You don't need a lot of rain to grow feed. I think we're 175 mil rainfall on average, but that can vary from a couple of inches a year or up to, I think, our highest rainfall since we've been here is 550 mils. So it's quite a unique property.
It is indeed. I've had the pleasure of being up there and seeing snippets of it, and fantastic description that you're still discovering corners of it after 30 years. It's a big chunk of land. You're running cattle on it. How many head are you running on it at the moment? And I assume that's really dictated a little bit by current conditions. And what would you run on it as a sort of a maximum number? And what are the cattle?
Currently, we've got about over 4,500 head, and we have actually been rebuilding our numbers from a pretty dry time back 2019 to 2020, where we had to sell off a lot of stock. Predominantly, it is an Angus herd, Black Angus. We've slowly been rolling over to a full black herd the last 15 years. Prior to that, we were Herefords. But we've also got a small infusion of Santa Gertrudis cattle as well, just to help clean up the coat and clean up the ear of the animal and keep a little bit of hybrid vigour in there.
Donna, it's demanding country and you're trying to manage thresholds. So technology, you've been using a lot, I understand, to try and help with a lot of those decisions. So what sort of things have you been implementing in terms of managing the herd and building the herd?
I think the pivotal point for us was when we had to offload a lot of stock and we ingested, and we actually could only find adjustment because all of Australia was quite dry as well, was actually on the northern tablelands in New South Wales near a place called Walker. And funnily enough, you know, these cattle went from one of the driest places in Australia to one of the wettest places where it actually snows. But we had to offload a lot of young females, and that was really challenging because they had been a product of some really careful and considerate breeding. And I think that really pushed us to be very specific on what we were going to offload moving forward. Like, we didn't want to lose any females that were in calf unnecessarily, or it just wasn't a measured offload. While it was, it wasn't, if that makes sense.
I would imagine then you're trying to make sure that what stock you've got on there are reproducing the way that you need. So I understand that you're using pregnancy scanning and indeed looking towards building a facility focused largely on that.
Yeah, so we decided that we really needed to ensure that anything that went off property female-wise was non-productive or just not desirable that we really wanted to include in the herd. So we did invest in the pregnancy scanning equipment, and that's been a real eye-opener. And our youngest son, Lachlan, has been the main player in doing the scanning and maintaining all the records. And he's really taken that under his portfolio, if you want to call it that, because we needed one person who was consistent with it to understand it and build the profile of the platform that we wanted to grow and understand that any female that wasn't scanned in calf, you'd give her another opportunity and you'd have to then put her out again. And if she didn't scan the second time around, well, she was gone. She was no use to us. She was just a freeloader, and so she was out the door. And so the boys have also started using some really Mickey Mouse genetics that we've been purchasing from the eastern states over the last few years and putting them with, you know, their top grade females and hoping to be able to supplement their paddock bull supply, because bull genetics are getting very, very expensive.
So that means you're trying to breed your own bulls, I'm guessing, from that. And EBVs, is that what that all falls under, estimated breeding values?
Yeah, the boys are very dedicated to going over the catalogue, and they are very focused on the EBV traits that they really want to ensure that are going to make an impact on the herd, grow the herd and make it highly functional, ensure that every mouthful of feed that is being chewed is actually being utilised in weight gain. So the EBVs, they use them a lot, but you've also got to still look at your phenotype. You've still got to ensure that the frame of that animal is going to stand up in our conditions. So while they may have the most amazing EBVs, they might not have the greatest phenotype. It's a very much a balancing act. Probably not such a big issue for anyone that might be southwards and have got smaller paddocks. But for us, these animals have still got to walk. And if they are not structurally correct, you know, that does limit their lifespan here.
It's a lot of technology, because you're talking also there about individual weight monitoring. And so you've got the tech that you need there. And every cow is being tracked, I'm guessing, through EIDs. So there's a lot of data that you're managing.
Yeah, there is. And they're doing the young steers as well. So as they come off their mums, they'll be tagged and scanned and followed to wherever they may get popped on the property. And if the boys get them in the yards at any point, they'll run them through the scanner just to check, see how they're going. They give a brief description of each calf, just trying to get an understanding on how each animal is performing. And it is really time consuming. And but, you know, they have found some really interesting things in terms of, you know, what breed of animal is doing better. There was one particular steer who looked really good and they thought, you know, was really going forward, but in fact was actually at the lower end of the scale of his average daily weight gain. So there's a lot you can do with your technology, and we're only really scratching at the surface. And, I think there's a lot of opportunity and growth to really maximise on the technology within your business model.
That technology, though, is helping you make really efficient decisions about the way the property is being run and feed is being used, as opposed to just an observation.
Absolutely. I think we're in a world now that people want background. They want to know what the animal is doing. And as a producer, you need to ensure that your product that you're producing, you understand it as well. And I think technology is going to play a big part in that. And I can only see it growing within our business model as everyone sort of settles into their roles. Like the boys are very keen to start using a DNA profile of each female that they're going to use in their breeding program. And then with the bulls that they go with, they will enter that data in and track that animal once it's born for the space of its life while it's on property. And that takes a lot of commitment. It's a time management issue as well. But I think as time goes on, you need to make sure that every animal you produce on the property is worthy of being here. You don't want freeloaders. Freeloaders cost money and they're no use to your bottom line. So that will be the focus for them later on. And I do know that they're very keen to implement using AI sires, and that may be a case as, you know, in a drought period, we can hold our young females, and while we're holding them and feeding them so we don't lose them, they will AI them and keep them moving forward until it eventually rains. And that way they can bounce back a lot quicker than traditionally. Trying to breed your way out of a drought is really hard work. It takes a long time. And South Australia is, you know, we don't have drought subsidies. We don't have fodder rebates. Your producer's got to be really proactive. And I think that's possibly the one way to be proactive to ensure that your core breeders never get below a certain number. Because if they do, your capacity to grow and your capacity to move forward once the rain hits is a lot quicker if you can retain those females.
Donna, you mentioned that, yes, this also takes time to use the tech, administer the tech. The tech is in other areas helping you save time through things such as remote water monitoring. It's a big property. There'd be a lot of time that you would have once spent driving around to check bores, wouldn't it?
For our property here, we're not so much regulated in our water runs like other places, but we were sort of having to do a run every 2 to 3 days because all our bores are solar pumps. But it has enabled us to reduce our maintenance costs on our vehicles, our diesel usage. So that has worked really well. And William, our middle son, flies a helicopter. So we've also found that in the event that we do have an alert come through via text message to say that one of the pumps is not working, he can be out there in 30 minutes, assess what the issue is, come back, pick up anything he might need if he needs something, and go back out. And within an hour and a half, it's all fixed. Previously, you'd have to drive out, which is, you know, maybe an hour or 2 hours, get out there, realise there's something wrong, drive all the way back, get what you need, and then drive back out to the location again. It does save you a lot of time.
Yes, a remarkable time saver, but it's all held together too, the technology, by internet access. So you're dependent upon a link, as we all are, I might add. But out there, it's another level of, well, I'm remote, and getting support, tech support, is not that easy a thing, I'd imagine, all the time.
No, it's challenging, and we don't have that luxury of options. So, you know, satellite is predominantly our only option for connectivity. So if the satellite goes down and is offline, well, we're completely blind. But generally, they're not offline for long. But the other day, it was, I think, 2 days it was offline. And our water monitoring subscription, the provider was really great at reaching out and keeping in contact with the subscribers. But it sort of does make you feel a little bit uneasy because you become a little bit complacent. It's very easy to look at a screen in your phone, in your kitchen or in the shed. And then once you realise that something's not working, it can cause a little bit of anxiety.
Donna, you mentioned you're looking towards using AI for helping manage the stock in the future in terms of drought. Are there other technologies you're looking to implement in the future?
We've gone over to full solar at the house, which has been amazing. It's just been incredible. That has just been a game saver for us in terms of cost. I think for our house generator, for example, I think our generator has only run for approximately 7 days in total since August last year. And that was only because it was cloudy weather. That's a huge cost saving, but the luxury of having power 24 hours a day and the silence that solar brings is incredible. We were really old school in that we actually still went down and turned our motor on and off. We'd go to bed and we'd go, isn't it great? We don't have to go turn the power off. It's still a real novelty. And I said to Andrew the other night, you know, this is just normal now for people, whereas we're going to still remember the generator days. Sorry, I went off track there a bit, but the AIing is a really big commitment. It's going to take a purpose-built facility. It's going to take someone to do an AI course. It will take a few years to implement, and it's only to supplement our paddock bulls. It's not to replace the sires that we do buy from the couple of studs that we do purchase from, because we don't want to run the risk of closing the genetic pool. We want to keep that open and vibrant, because you can't be closed in that gene pool, because it does have an overall effect, especially in a dry time. If you're breeding your own bulls and your gene pool's really small in your herd, those animals, they don't look that great, and you just run a real risk of doing your herd and your business an injustice.
Donna, all this technology, does it give you and Andrew now far greater confidence and assurity as well in terms of return and income stream compared to when you first turned up?
Oh, look, I think you're a more measured in your business approach. The core business is still the same. Like, you can't change the country. You're still raising cattle in a fairly dry climate. You have your boom bust years. So, you know, you'll have your maybe 2 fantastic years out of 10, 4 average years, and then the remainder, you know, they'd be a little bit quieter and not as productive. But the technology now, it enables you to make more measured decisions on how your business is going to react to those seasonal conditions. And I think in terms of the country's capacity, it's enabled us to grow our stock rate, because you can be more measured in your daily management. I think in the future, there'll be more of a change towards producing animals that will respond quicker to rain events and have them off property before they're a year old. And that will give us the opportunity to run more breeders. So it'll be about growing the breeding numbers and ensuring that any progeny are going to be really progressive in their development and out the door before they're 1 year of age. And I don't think that kind of approach would have been possible without technology. And you know what? It won't be our goals moving forward. It'll be the next generation and how they will implement the technology as well. I think that will be really interesting. And I think there's lots of opportunity for it to be included in your business model. And I hope that the boys really understand that they have that really unique opportunity to do that. And I think anyone that's not using technology to its fullest extent is probably cheating themselves a little bit.
Donna, I reckon that's a great insight to wrap up on. Donna Clark from Allendale Station, it's been a remarkable journey for you and Andrew over the last 30 years, and may it continue. Thanks so much for taking the time and joining us for this PIRZA podcast.
Oh, thanks, Drew. No, it's been great, and hopefully we can implement some of those desirable technology projects that in 5 years' time we can be back here talking about them, and it's all good.
The Red Meat and Wool Growth Program is an initiative of the Department of Primary Industries and Regions and supported by Meat and Livestock Australia, SA Sheep and Cattle Industry Funds and Sheep Connect SA.